All set? Okay, great. Thanks for being here today, and thanks for having me. I think it's a really interesting topic, so much so we got a little attention on Fox News last week to get some attention around the issue. And it's something that I've become more and more required, really, to be aware of in my profession and what I'm working with children and families, because so many times parents come in with concerns, questions around what is appropriate, what's not, how old should my child be for a social media type of account or cell phone, what kind of video games are appropriate, how do I set limits around it, and I think one that gets a bit lost in the mix is how do you put correct parental controls in place for children and adolescents so they're not being exposed to material or people who you don't want them to be, or you content that you don't want them to have access to. So that's what we're going to do today. As an overview, I'm just going to go over some of the background and overview of the topic itself. What is screen time? What does some of the research suggest? Most importantly, actions you could take tomorrow. So I'm going to run through, I think, my top list of things you can begin to do immediately to put better parental controls in place, how to appropriately negotiate screen time with your children and adolescents, and then some helpful resources that I'll just overview, and finish with the Q&A section where you'll be asked, you can always write down, do we have those cards? Okay, so we can write down some questions as I'm talking, and we'll address those at the end, all right? You can interrupt, though, if there's things throughout the discussion that you want to want addressed more immediately. I could certainly do that. Okay, so first of all, what is screen time? It has really evolved since my day. Having a TV, I think my family is one of the first to have a VHS system to play tapes. And we had an Atari, and before that a Pong, and that was about it. That's about the that's about what we had with screen time. I'm sorry, next slide for those on the podcast. According to the National Institutes of Health, they define screen time as the following. It's a term used for activities done in front of a screen, right? Can't get more objective than that, right? So it's pretty tautological in its definition. But more importantly, I think, is this other part that they mention. It involves sedentary activity, meaning you are being physically inactive while sitting down. Okay, so all screen time involves sedentary activity. I think it's an important part of their definition, and more it'll come up with what we talk about more around why this is so important to monitor. Now, with technology advancing as it has, what involves or what is included as screen time or screen devices, if you will, has really, really advanced. So television, laptops and computers, video games, and that does not just include your household desktop type of platforms, but also all the handheld devices that are available now, the PSP and the newer versions of the PlayStation Portable, the Nintendo DS and all the different iterations of that. iPads, tablets, Kindles, notebooks, MP3 and iPod players for musical devices, and now smartphones, which have access to a lot of the same material, right, with different types of games. Who's not played Trivia Crack yet? You have not? Ever? Okay, so who has? So it's an addictive game that is trivia. All of this is accessible online on your phone. So what we really need to look at in terms of screen time has really exploded. And in my assessments, when I work with families, one of the important questions that I ask is, how much screen time do you allow at home? And parents will first typically go to what they view on television, and again, maybe the video games. But when you really sit down and track how much time, it's difficult to really gauge. And so parents often will give me responses, well, I don't know, maybe between 2-3 hours. And if there's more than one parent in the room, they often get a questioning look from the other parent saying, are you kidding me? It's probably more like 4 or 6 hours when we add it all up. And so I'm really talking about the amount of time spent in front of a screen with all these different types of devices, and plus there are probably others out there that I didn't even mention. So as parents, it's important to really consider what is accessible in your house, but also what's accessible away from your house. Okay, so what controls do you have in terms of what they're accessing when they're not with you, which is even more scary. Okay. So, why is this important? Children are exposed to, first of all, when I look at issues that come up around parenting consultations that I have, there are, I think, four main categories. I would lump these fights, right? So the title of the talk today is, fighting with your children over screen time. Well, what are these fights? So typically, I see these four. Time allotment per day. So what are you actually allowing per day for them to be viewing? And often it's a discussion of, is it okay to have more on the weekend days versus weekdays or school days? So kids argue about that all the time. Scheduling. Screen time is another separate issue. I think it overlaps with the first, but more importantly, are there restricted hours? So there's no screen time, in the morning or right after school until this time, for example, or maybe media free times that you have set up within your household. Content. So what is appropriate? What's developmentally appropriate and inappropriate for a 7-year-old is going to be different than what you may allow access to for a 14-year-old or a 12-year-old even. The medium. So kids often will argue, all my friends have cell phones. I want a cell phone. And you're thinking, you are way too young for a cell phone. Platforms even. So, all my friends have an Xbox and the headphones so I could chat with people during games, and they want all the newest and best. Yet all of them may not be appropriate for your children based on their age. So those are really the four I see as most critical in terms of what you end up fighting over. Did I miss any? Are there things that wouldn't fall in one of those four categories that you end up fighting over screen time with your children? The question is, what about Study Island?
That's like so what about? Computer, so it's like they're doing something academic.
No, I know what it is. I have to repeat the questions. Pardon? I have to repeat the questions so the people on the podcast can hear. So the question is, what about that? So I'm going to ask you, what about it?
So would you consider that screen time, even though it's academic and it's school-related?
Great question. So the question is, would you consider something educational, I'm putting it in quotes, as screen time? We'll open that to the discussion of the group here. What do you think?
Yes.
Yes? Who says no? Okay, what do you think?
I guess for certain kids of mine, I'm just happy that they're doing something academic.
Okay, all right.
So for that specific child, I would actually exclude it for screen time, but for everybody else, it would be considered screen time. Because
okay. All right. So the response was, I'm just happy for certain children of mine that they're actually doing something academic, so I won't include it for them, but I might include it for other kids, depending on their maturity level, their age, their whatever. So I think, it depends, right? It would depend. I think, yes, it is screen time. You can't argue that, given the definition that we're operating from. Our operational definition is any time spent in front of a screen. So yes, it would be screen time. We'll look at that though later on in the presentation regarding what's possibly good or bad medium or formats that they're able to access, if it's educational or not. One I get a lot, particularly for kids who are using technology for schoolwork, which is almost impossible these days for high school students, and it's going down and down, right? So how many times do kids have to access their homework online? Or they're using their computer or laptop to type out their reports. And they're doing so, and then you don't know if they're really doing their homework or doing something academic, or if they're watching YouTube videos for hours on end. So it's difficult, and that's part of this discussion. What a great question. So the important part of this in terms of what you're fighting around, all of these four categories, and I didn't miss any, right? Would you agree these? I've captured most of the arguments that you have. Okay. All of them involve limit setting. So you're placing some limits on what they can access with content, what types of devices they have access to based on their developmental level, how you're going to schedule screen time or place limits around restricted hours, or you're limiting the amount of time they actually spend. So it's all an aspect of effective discipline management. And what does discipline management. It's a key aspect of effective parenting. So that's why this is so important to me, because a lot of the work I do with parents in my practice involves managing appropriate discipline, creating positive incentives around different things like screen time, and putting correct limits and structures in place around the things that you need to for your children based on the developmental level. And I would, not be doing my job very well if I didn't understand how to coach parents in putting the correct parental limits in place around screen time, but also how to navigate, different types of discipline when you are addressing these things with your children. I saw some people taking screenshots. Sarah, this will be online, correct? We'll upload this so you don't have to take notes or pictures if you don't like. You can always go back to this. It will be provided at the Connecting for Kids website. Next slide. So, another important question and why this is such an important topic is, what happens if you don't have create limits around this? Unlimited screen time can do a number of things, including the following. Takes away from time that children are doing or participating in other activities that are very important, such as reading, schoolwork, playing with their friends, playing with their peers, with their siblings, with you, family time, exercise, a huge one, and their overall social development. It can make it very difficult for your child to sleep at night. Okay, so a lot of sleep issues that I see can be directly associated with how much screen time you're allowing. We'll look at that specific one in a second. It can raise your child's risk for attentional difficulties, anxiety, depression, and other types of mental health issues. It can raise your child's risk for gaining too much weight, obesity, another key one we'll look at in another slide. And research has shown that it can decrease your children's overall academic performance. So those who have more access or unlimited access to screen time tend to do more poorly than children who are in family systems where parents are putting limits and structure around screen time. Next slide. We're going to first look at obesity. So this makes a lot of sense, that this is a risk factor for screen time, unlimited screen time, based on, again, our definition of sedentary activity. So with obesity, we know that when you're involved with screen time, too much screen time rather, you are not being physically active, right? So that's pretty straightforward. The less time you spend doing this type of activity, the more time you have for exercise. Commercials and other screen ads can lead to unhealthy food choices for children and adolescents. They're not of an age where they can make these types of decisions in an informed way. Even adults I know don't make the best decisions for themselves based on ads that they see on television. But again, know that these ads are occurring everywhere, right? On your web searches, the more you search a certain topic, the more you're going to see ads for that particular thing. It works behind the scenes all the time. So if you ever wonder why certain ads pop up on your computer but not on another person's computer, it's because it's tracking all of your keywords that you search and the like. So commercials would be popping up for your children if they have their own, say, iPad. It's going to be tracking that if they're on the internet through that device. And so they're going to be exposed to a lot of material that you may not want them to be exposed to. And again, around the issue of obesity, they'll be exposed to a lot of things that they want you to buy for them that may not be the best choice for them from their health, physical health. Again, on other research, the more sedentary you are as an individual, the more you eat. So you can't eat a bag of chips if you're running around playing a game of basketball. I guess suppose you could. It wouldn't be the best decision, and you probably wouldn't do that activity very well. But when you're sitting, being sedentary, guess what happens? We know the research, you're going to eat more. And this is not exclusive to adults. This happens to our children as well. So another reason to limit screen time. Sleep, another important issue here around screen time. When you look at good sleep hygiene, you have to consider a consistent bedtime and bedtime routine, right? So that's part of a good sleep hygiene. Elimination of caffeine is another important aspect of good sleep hygiene, particularly the closer you get to bedtime. And engaging in daily exercise. If you're not getting enough physical activity, you're not going to sleep as well, or you're going to have greater risk for sleep difficulties. And that can include trouble falling asleep, which I see commonly, but also difficulty staying asleep. So you may fall asleep, but then you keep waking up intermittently throughout the night, neither of which helps you stay focused and feel good about yourself and energized the next day and the days that follow. But important to the issue of screen time, aside from those first bullets, not allowing media and technology of any kind in the bedroom. Now, this is going to be a tough one, I'm sure, for most of the parents in this room, because it happens across the globe in terms of what types of media and technology children have access to. Most children have TVs in their bedrooms these days. Most families are not, you know, putting restrictions around their cell phones. If they have a cell phone, they take them to bed with them. Their iPads, DVD players, accessing a lot of screen time after they go to bed, and after you go to bed even. So that's part of good sleep hygiene. More recent evidence, the last bullet here, showing that the light emitted from certain screen devices inhibits your body's production of natural production of melatonin. Melatonin helps induce the sleepiness, right, that we need to fall asleep. So more and more evidence that if we decrease the amount of screen time we have during the day, the more our body will produce naturally what it's supposed to in terms of the melatonin levels, and that'll help you go to, you know, fall asleep. So another, again, more concrete evidence, physiological evidence for why this is an important issue. Next slide. We're going to look at the medium, in terms of the arguments, the fights that happen, and then we'll look at content next. So the medium, most devices, another part of why technology has made this so difficult for family systems, is that most screen devices are equipped with direct online access. I can't tell you how many countless families I've had who have told me, oh, I got them, or I ask about internet access and appropriate levels of control for accessing things on the internet or online, and they parents tend to focus on their computer or laptop or a tablet, and then I ask, well, do they have a PSP or Nintendo DS? Well, yeah, they do. Well, what kind of parameters are you putting in place for that? Well, I don't have any on that. Well, it is equipped with Wi-Fi. Do you have a Wi-Fi open access in your household? Yes. Okay, well, then they could be accessing the internet. And a lot of parents, are wide-eyed when I look at that with them. And not because they, don't care, but because they don't know. A while back when the iPod Touch came out, I don't know if you're familiar with that, a lot of parents whose children were begging them for an iPhone said, oh, this is a perfect solution. It has everything that an iPhone has, except you don't have, it's on a cell phone. You can't call, you can't text, and the like. Well, a lot of people made a lot of money selling them to parents who did not have the knowledge that it is Wi-Fi equipped. And if you have Wi-Fi and you can connect to any open Wi-Fi point, you can get on the internet. Not only that, you can text, from an email account that's set up almost automatically when you have an iProduct, I guess, if you will. And so, there are many kids who have gotten into a lot of trouble with online purchases, exposing certain material out there in the online community or via texting or other social media platforms without parents' knowledge at all. So they face real risks, real dangers with being online, accessing areas that are inappropriate for them or overwhelming for them, being exposed to online information that promotes hate, violence, or pornography, being misled or bombarded with intense advertising, as we talked about, being invited to register for prizes or to join clubs when they are providing personal or household information to an unknown source. I had one mom who was livid. Her son ran up, I think it was about $750 to $1,500 of online charges for video games directly through his PlayStation at home. Because there's a whole area in there where you can control, online purchases with the parental passwords. We'll look at that in a second. But because the mom didn't take those steps and set up the child's account initially to download some game that she said was okay, he went with it and ran with it, and she was unaware until she got these charges. Revealing too much personal information on social media. We'll look at ways to manage that in a second when we look at some interventions that you could, actions you could take place. But a lot of kids aren't aware of that. They don't realize the risk because they're too young to understand that once you put something out there, you cannot take it back. And no matter what you put out there, anyone else can copy it, paste it, screenshot it, send it to anyone else that they have access to themselves. So they need to be taught and educated about how to keep themselves safe. Being bullied on social media sites. How much have we seen, recently with children bullying each other, or even worse, some parents who have, colluded in that bullying of children to help their children get back at other children. It's becoming more and more of an issue. So more important for parents to begin to understand and take immediate action to limit how much their children are accessing and what kinds of mediums they're allowing them to have access to. Next slide. Content. So, as a parent, you have to decide what's developmentally appropriate for your child. There are many guidelines out there, however, many parents don't follow them, and it's your choice. You have to make those decisions. It's part of being a parent. And every parent is different, every family system is different, every child is different in terms of what they can handle. We'll look at some ways of generally managing some rules around that, but again, there's always fuzzy areas for that for you to decide as a parent. So you need to take the time to really put some thought into what you want them to have access to and what limits you're going to put in place so that they're not accessing this type of content. And again, this involves movies, looking at the rating systems there, even television. I don't even have cable anymore. I use Netflix and an antenna. But even with the antenna, having access to some regular channels, the primary channels, more and more content that I see is completely inappropriate for children at different times of the day. Things that they could see on the weekends, in the mornings, TV viewing right after school when parents aren't around. There's a lot that is out there that is not appropriate and that parents need to be well aware of. Video games and the rating systems around those that we'll look at. And also social media. So if you look at what different social medium requirements involve. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, Tumblr, Reddit, Snapchat, they all have a 13-year-old minimum age requirement. Now, by a show of hands, how many parents think that 13-year-olds should have access to, say, Facebook? Okay, not one parent raised their hands. Now, many children do. 13 and even younger, because guess what? Despite these general recommendations or rules that they have posted on their website, children younger than 13 can still create accounts. The same for YouTube and Vine. They have a higher age cutoff of 17 to 18 years old. Again, however, parents can help their children set up accounts. And with YouTube in particular, even Facebook, doing a simple search on Facebook, you could still access photos and content from people's websites without even having an account. So really what this involves is how much you're able to upload, right? So you can view sometimes without an account, right? So going back to making sure you have parental controls in place around different websites that you don't want them to have contact with at all, but also if you do, once you do allow them to have access to their own account, know that they're going to be able to post and upload whatever they want. So again, making sure you're looking at these age requirements and making those decisions. All right, so any questions so far? Next slide. Any questions, comments? Okay, so what can you do about this? Actions you could take tomorrow. And these are in no particular order. First, setting limits on screen time, right? So we talked about this earlier. What is the National Institutes of Health, what do they recommend? Children under two, they actually recommend no screen time. Now, I even found that surprising, but as parents, it's tough. It's tough to not allow access until after age two to begin to, or at least up to age two, to access or have some type of screen time. For children above two, their general recommendation is 1 to 2 hours per day max. And notice that this is not, they don't say, oh, school days, it's this much, and weekends, it's okay to have more. So this is a daily recommendation of maximum of 2 hours per day. I don't care if it's Saturday, Friday, or Sunday. It should still be the same rule based on their recommendations. Now, most kids are getting more than that. And again, look at what you're allowing and count. I encourage you to really tally. Take a week and really put attention on how much time your children are really spending on the screen. Despite ads that you may have seen, there is no evidence that videos that are aimed at very, very young children, so those younger, right, than two, are going to improve their development. So kind of coming back to your question about, you know, things that are academic, obviously this is not just addressing those things, but yes, there are some activities that a lot of kids, you know, will have access to and that you allow, that you may even purchase, that may help their learning, and that's evident. This is more targeted to those very young children, you know, younger than age two. So involve them in other types of activities. We'll look at other options for that. But again, these are the recommendations by the National Institutes of Health. What else can you do? Set structural limits on screen time. So beyond just how much time is allowed, what are some structural things you could do? Remove the TV and all screen devices from your child's bedrooms and from your bedroom. You know, if you look, the more research on sleep and sleep patterns and good sleep hygiene, sleep your bedroom should be, there's really one activity that should be done there, sleeping. Maybe reading and things like that. But for kids especially, it should be a place of that's very quiet, without a lot of stimulation. I would encourage your parents to even take other things that are stimulating out of their bedroom. Toys that they can play with that are, you know, keeping them up at night after they go to bed. If they do wake up in the middle of the night, one of the problems for kids who have sleep difficulties with not being able to fall back asleep is that they have access to things in their bedroom that end up keeping them up, stimulating them, then that makes it much more difficult for them to fall back asleep. So beyond TV, even other things that, or their screen time, for example, other access to other things in their bedroom can really help with sleep. Limit or don't allow screen time during meals or homework. Make it just a hard and fast rule in your household. Not allowing your children to eat while they're engaged in screen time, or vice versa, right? So again, looking at what we looked at with the data, the more time they spend during screen time, the more likely they're going to eat. So making a very clear distinction that there's no eating during screen time. Do not leave the TV on or other electronic devices on just as background noise. And again, a lot of us are guilty of this. Other ideas, and turn on the radio if you want some background noise in your household, or just, you know, have no background noise at all. Because parents ask me that all the time when they're looking at total time in front of a screen. I'm like, well, my TV's always on. You know, the dogs like it, you know, too. So we leave it on all the time. I would encourage you not to do that because it almost establishes it as a norm, right? Versus a privilege that we'll look at in a second. Next slide. Another action you could take tomorrow. Be a good role model as a parent. And I can't underscore this enough. I probably ought to put it as number one. How glued are we to, you know, what we used to call crackberries, our iPhones? We have instant access to other people by texting, calling, emailing right in the palm of our hands. And others have access to us in a way that we didn't have a decade, two decades ago. So monitor that yourself, because you are setting an example for your children. And if you constantly are on your phone, checking your emails, checking your texts, even parents who spend more time on social media than their children these days, you're setting an example. Your children are watching you. So decrease your own screen time to 2 hours. Commit to it. Test yourself. Challenge yourself to commit yours to that time limit. Because I can't tell you, especially preteens and teens and even younger children who are pretty bright, who say, it's just not fair. Dad says I can only have 2 hours, but he's on the computer almost all the time. Or mom is always watching all of her shows when we're supposed to be cleaning up, you know, doing our homework and the like. So challenge yourself to, you know, set these same limits. Put your smartphones away during meals, family time, bedtime. A great way of doing this is to dock all cell phones. Let's say there's four in your household. They sell docking stations now for charging. Leave it in the kitchen. Leave it in the living room. When everyone goes to bed, they have to put it on the docking station. If things are, you know, if there's a real emergency, you know, they could use their landline. I know, though, So many families don't have landlines now. They just use their cell phone lines. But it's a good reason to maintain a landline, you know, for emergencies if you have them, so that everyone is across the board utilizing their time well, right? So if you have access to screen devices, your phones in particular, it's going to pull you off track a lot. It's going to distract you. It leads to excessive number of projects that are incomplete. So as a parent, this can affect you as well positively, the more you limit your own time. Question?
I assume that, if I read a book on the Kindle on my iPad, that's screen time instead of reading a book?
The question is, if I'm reading a book on my Kindle, Fire, Nook, is that screen time, and do I then have to limit it? No. So it's one of those, I would say no. It's part of those discussions of what you mentioned, right? Is it something academic? Now, because if you're not reading books anymore in their paper forms, I wouldn't tell you have to limit that. With your children, if they use that as an excuse, though, well, you're on your Nook, so I want to be on my iPad. If you want them to be able to read books that they enjoy, awesome. That's great. Reading literacy is very important for children's development, but put the limits in place around what they can access or turn on that device, so that you know the only thing they're doing are things that you approve that may be more academic, like you're mentioning, or that you're mentioning with reading some favorite activities. And we'll look at some examples of that in a second. But great question. Choose a certain media-free period or periods throughout the day for the entire family, and then find some other activities you can do together. So much of our time is spent split in the household. And maybe we get together to eat, but then everyone goes their separate ways to get on their own screen time, and you don't see each other until the morning or until when it's time to tell them to go to bed. Spend more time together. You could decrease the amount of screen time for everyone in the household if you put these limits in place. And involve your children in that discussion. They may find it very helpful for you to say, look, I admit that I use my cell phone too much. I'm on the computer too much. I'm concerned that it's happening for you too. We're having a family meeting to sit down and really discuss this. What do you guys think? What would be a good way, or how much time do you think we should allow? How much time, or what are good times of the day where we don't have any media access? And really involve them in that discussion. Next action you could take. Create screen time itself as an incentive. So going back to good discipline, using positive parenting techniques, you can set up very clear contracts with kids, or sticker charts, or reinforcement systems around basic PREMAC principles. If then or when then contingencies, right? So grandma's rule. If you do your homework, then you earn half an hour of screen time. When you do your chore, you earn another half hour of screen time. You create the contingencies around what they're able to access, and this really helps with the structure, right? So if you're putting limits on the time, what better way of saying it, making it a hierarchy, right? So it's up to you. If you do everything that's on your list, you have it up to 2 hours max that you could spend on the screen time, but you have to make sure you handle all these four responsibilities or activities, chores, homework. If you are encouraging children to read a certain minutes or number of minutes a day, you could be really creative of what they have to earn. So this is a privilege. Not every kid has multiple screen devices in their household. Your children may be lucky that they have more than just a TV in their household, in your household. So but make it a privilege. This is something they can earn. And you're not being mean by doing that. You're establishing good boundaries, again, which goes back to effective parenting. If you have unlimited access to screen time, you have unlimited, in terms of time and in terms of access to content, your children, again, are at risk for a number of issues. Negotiate with teens around this. So, you may create a pretty basic structure for younger children, but preteens and teens should be involved. I always encourage parents, and part of what I do is actually mediate parent-teen discussions around issues like this, right? So the more you involve and engage teens in the decision making, both in terms of what's expected, right, very clearly, concrete, here's what we expect from you today, and what the consequences are, both positive and negative, the more likely they're going to follow through. And if parents take a stance of being very rigid, it's my house, you live by my rules, I don't care what you have to say about this, two things can happen, neither of which are good for social development. You get a child who's very rebellious, acting out behaviorally, right? Or you get a child that's very passive, and just very, okay, they don't speak up, they don't speak their mind, they never voice their own opinions. Neither of those outcomes are going to be very helpful for your child as they mature and as they develop into other healthy relationships that you want them to be able to speak up and be a part of that kind of process. Next slide. So, we talked about this already, but select developmentally appropriate television shows, video games, and websites that you think are okay. And you need to make these decisions across, as I mentioned, ever-expanding social media platforms and outlets in order to keep them safe. So we'll look at it in a second in terms of parental controls, but even before using parental controls, just understanding what systems are out there. The ESRB, the Entertainment Software Rating Board, has the following, next slide, has the following rating system. So there's six main categories of ratings for video games. And by the way, the ESRB has been around, they just celebrated last year in 2014, their 20th anniversary. So they've been around a very long time. I even found that surprising. I didn't know it's been in place for that long. And they look at different ratings to help parents make decisions around what's appropriate for kids based on their age level. So early childhood, EC, for children 3 and older. E for just everyone, that's generally for kids 6 and older, generally has material that maybe cartoon or fantasy, mild violence or infrequent use of mild language. E 10 plus is for everyone 10 years older and or above. That has again more cartoon fantasy, a little more mild violence and mild language, and minimally suggestive themes embedded within the activity in the game. Teen would be for 13 years and older. There you see that 13-year-old kind of cutoff again. These games can contain violence, suggestive themes, crude humor, minimal blood, simulated gambling, and/or infrequent use of strong language. Mature 17 plus, it just goes up from there. And adults only, AO, would be a rating for kids or adults 18 years and older. And again, these have escalated to prolonged scenes of intense violence or graphic sexual content and even nudity. So please use these as you're allowing access to different types of games on your children's video games, both at home and on their handhelds. They even have there's a common joke now, there's an app for that, right? They even have an app for your phone. You could download right to your smartphone. So if you're in the store and you're not sure what's what, you can look up any game and it'll give you more specific content than this. So these are the general rating symbols, but then usually on the front of the video game. And on the back, you can flip it over and there's a smaller box that tells you as a parent why it got that particular rating based on the content and suggestions that you see here. One game might be purely, much more because of violence or bloody kind of, gore. Another one may have much more strong sexual content or humor involved in it, and so you can make that decision. If you're feeling your child's old enough to do, some fighting, army-like battle scenes, but they're not quite ready for that other level of content, then you could look more closely, and it gives you very specific information to look at that, okay? Next slide. For good or bad, parents are required to become tech experts with working knowledge of the internet, Wi-Fi access, management of logins for your computers, for your kids' digital devices, and administrator or parental controls. So when you look at parental controls, the bullets that are listed here are the general categories, right, that are involved when we talk about parental controls, both for online access and what they're able to do while they're online on each device, but also for gaming software. So first, disabling, filtering, or blocking internet. You can do this for a PlayStation. You could do this for an Xbox. The ESRB website is one of my recommendations for resources at the end. You go to their website, they even have videos that you could click on that take you step by step graphically. You see it on the screen. If you have your laptop set up and you could go and turn on your child's PlayStation, Wii, console, whatever it is, and go into the parental controls, they take you step by step to create passwords so that your children can't, you know, restore it back to default. You want to set it up and make sure that it's in place and test it out. So you can turn all internet access off for a Wi-Fi equipped device that's in your household when you don't want your child to be surfing the internet. If all you want them to be able to do on the PlayStation is play video games, then you could turn this off completely. You could also turn off game in-game purchases. So a lot of times, again, when you turn on your PlayStation, Xbox, one of the first things your kids see, advertisements. If it's hooked up to the internet, it's automatically updated and they get regular advertisements for games, again, based on what they've already played, but also other material or games that you may not want them to have. So you can disable that altogether with the password that you create that you keep safe and hidden from your child. Enabling game rating restrictions. So another area to go within a PlayStation or an Xbox is into the parental controls, and you can actually allow access to certain games based on the ESRB ratings that we just looked at. And some systems use a different, like 1 through 9 scale, I think it is, that overlaps with the ESRB. So if you only want them to have access to the E+10, then you can set it just at that level. They won't have any access to any games that are beyond that. So even if they put in a game, if their friend lets them borrow Call of Duty, they put it into the console, they turn it on, put it in, it won't even let them play it. You have to enter the parent's password in order for it to play. Some systems will allow time limit settings. So you can specify as a parent, again, in a way where your child can't change it, how much time you want them to be able to have access to per session. Creating profiles is a wonderful way of doing this. This would be on your gaming systems, right? So you have a password, you have a profile for yourself as parent or administrator with your own password. Your 7-year-old has his or her own account with his or her own password. Maybe your 14-year-old has their own profile with their own password. And what happens when you go into each of those, you can set what you want. So if you want your 7-year-old to have certain access with games and even video games. So more and more, these are multiple devices that can do many things. So a PlayStation, Xbox, they can play DVDs, they can play Blu-rays. So again, be mindful of that. If your child puts in a movie that you don't want them to have access to, it's rated R, you could set limitations on that. And again, do it so based on each child in your household if you have more than one. And even more and more parents who are gamers, right? So even more important. Dad wants to play his game. He has a login, or mom has a login for hers, and they could play games, right, based on what you allow as an administrator based on the profile. You can block outgoing content on the internet, right? So if you don't want your children to be able to upload anything, images, videos, other things, text messages, emails, you could block that type of content. Using and keeping abreast of how to turn these different systems on or softwares is to use monitoring tools. The software that's available can do, even for your computer, for your laptop, for your different tablet devices, you can go within its own drop-down settings to do a lot of the same things that I just mentioned with your devices, gaming devices, but also other third-party software that can be purchased to allow you to have greater control over what your children are accessing. Even as sophisticated as knowing, having a list that keeps a log of everything they've typed in, to their search engine, a list of all the websites that they've gone to, and more and more you can do this also with cell phones. So the same type of sophistication is available for cell phone usage, which we'll look at in a second, in terms of when is that an okay age to consider that. Talk to your provider, your cell phone provider, to really know specifically, because we'll be here all day if I went through every one and I don't even know all of them. Talk to your provider of your internet to know what you can do on your child's device to block and have restrictions around web access. So if you do want them to have a cell phone but you don't want them to be able to go on the internet, you can do so with the limitations that are set behind the scenes, through your plan. Any questions about that so far? Okay. Next screen. I think this is another underrated recommendation. Talk with your children and educate them, and do this as early as possible. I didn't ask the age ranges of the children of the parents in the room, but it's never too late to do this, to sit down and have a serious discussion about what is appropriate, what's not. This includes teaching them that, you know, talking to a screen name on their computer or in a chat room is the same as talking with a stranger. I love this one. This is because, you know, we consider that out in, you know, actual face-to-face interactions, but we don't really consider that, right, when we're online. We think, oh, we're safe. I'm in my house. They could be anywhere in the world. Doesn't matter, right? Well, you're wrong. They can get into and have access to material, personal information for your child, your information as a family, if your child's not smart about it. So a lot of this comes down to you knowing your child and knowing when they're ready to manage this level of responsibility. And again, it starts with educating them and teaching them and reinforcing the same type of protection you would want them to exhibit in face-to-face interactions. Teach your children never to give out any personal identifying information to another individual or website online. And they'll be prompted to do so, even if they didn't say they wanted to. Right? How many times has that happened to you? You click on something, it opens up, and it's asking you to type in a password or to give your social security number, right? Same thing with emails. Be very, very careful, and I'm sure you are as adults, but they need to understand this. So knowing that if they have social media, if they have an email account, if they have a profile on YouTube, all these different things, they need to execute the same type of caution and concern so they don't put themselves at risk or even your family at risk for fraud, credit card fraud, things like that. Teach your child never to agree to actually meet someone they've met online. So you could turn off, I didn't mention this with the parental controls, you could turn off the in-game settings to not allow communication. So a lot of games you can go online and play with other people and they can either chat, right, if you've got the headset all set up. There's even video features now where you can see other people playing and even just chat rooms where they can go in and type, you know, messages to the people that they're playing with. Teach them early on, again, to never, ever agree to meet with anyone, you know, that they've met online. In the PlayStation system, and I'm sure it's similar to the others, another parental control is to, you know, because you could send a message to a friend and let them join as a friend and have contact with them online. You could allow that if you know the child, you talk to the other parent, you know that that's their real login and that they're communicating to each other, that's fine. But execute the same level of monitoring of it as you would if they had a cell phone, right, or an email account. You as a parent will tell your child or ought to tell your child, we're allowing this based on, you know, you showing us that you're mature enough, but we are still your parents and we're going to monitor this regularly so we know where you are and who you're talking with. Never give your child credit card numbers or passwords that will enable online purchases or access to inappropriate services or sites. Remind them that not everything they see or read online is true. That's an important one because, again, even adults are guilty of that when they're searching the web. So just basic education and appropriate monitoring and interaction with your children early on so that they know that you're aware of these issues. I had a parent recently who said, you know, I wasn't aware of how much I didn't know until I sat down and talked it through with my child. And they even helped me set these controls. Trust me, they know it better than you do. So even more reason to educate yourself. Again, there's really good resources I'll give you at the end to read up on this. There's no manual, right? You didn't get a manual when you had your children. So you have to find out kind of along the way what's appropriate. And with the technology that is, it's exploding, it's becoming much more difficult for families to stay abreast of these issues. Next slide. Consider your child's maturity level when making decisions about what devices they you will allow and what platforms and mediums you will allow. So, for example, providing an individual email address or social media account only if a child's mature enough to manage it. Now, again, that sounds pretty generic, but really, you know your children best. And I can't stand up here, nor can any website tell you how old your child should be to have a social media account. You need to make that decision based on your understanding of your child. Because there are some 12-year-olds who can certainly manage this, or 13-year-olds who can manage this, and some who should not have an account or have their own email address. Plan to periodically monitor your child's email and online activity and tell them that you're going to do it. That helps them know that they, you know, are going to have someone watching over them, just like you would with where they're going to meet a friend, you know, checking with another parent if your child's having a sleepover. Those same level of protections that you place with their actual face-to-face interactions with others, you need to monitor as well online. Monitor the content of a child's personal webpage and screen name if appropriate. If they have these different social media accounts, make sure you're looking at it with them, you're checking in with them regularly so that you keep them safe, not only from predators, you know, but also from the bullying that we talked about. So they need to be respectful and courteous when they're interacting with others, just like you want them to be, again, in face-to-face interactions. Next slide. So, when is your child ready for a cell phone? I get that question a lot. I think there's some important questions you could ask yourself as you're considering this to determine your child's readiness. Does she understand the cost? Right, so that's one big one. Kids are just clueless. All my friends have a cell phone, and you're thinking, I can hardly pay for mine and the other adults in the family. I can't even consider what it would be to add the cost for you. Make sure they understand that this is not just a free thing. This is something you're paying for, and again, it's a privilege. Can they monitor it? Can they manage it responsibly? Will they use the cell phone respectfully? Again, never sending a text message that is mean, that's, you know, has ill will, that's bullying. To be very careful what you send out, even more so than what you say face to face, right? Just like in emails, I'm sure as adults you've learned. Anyone could copy and paste that or send it to anyone else that you that you don't even want them to have to be sharing it with. So even more important to help them understand this needs to be done respectfully and responsibly. Can they take good care of it? These are not cheap. And even if you get the insurance around some cell phones these days, you end up, if you really read or if you ever have it happen to you, it doesn't cover most of what you think it's going to cover if you break your phone and all of a sudden you're shelling out another $150 even though you're spending $10 a month for insurance. So can they take good care of it? Will they accept the consequences if it's not used properly? So have that, it's part of that discussion with them, making sure they know, and again, for adolescents, having them help you come up with appropriate positive and negative consequences for them following the rules that you establish around their cell phone use. And allow for more access advancing what they have access to with a cell phone as they develop and mature. But make it so that they have to prove it to you, right? So a lot of parents, you know, are jumping right into smartphones without considering the possibility of starting with a very basic cell phone, right, that has no internet access even equipped on it as a device that only allows phone calls, voice calls, and texting. And even with that, you could turn off texting altogether, right? Or you could limit the amount of data that that's being used so that they'll have their own little cap already predetermined based on how you want it set up. And then tell them, if you could do this with this phone for X amount of time and show us that you haven't lost it, you haven't broken it, you haven't done anything stupid with it, with interactions with other peers, then we'll look at getting you bumping you up to a smarter phone. So kind of gradually, again, considering developmental appropriateness means you assessing where your child is developmentally and with their maturation. So you don't want to limit them. You don't want to stifle their development because, again, for good or bad, social media, texting, the Facebooking, accounts, the other ones that I mentioned earlier, Instagram, it's becoming a part of our children's existence and their interactions. Some research is even showing that when parents are too strict, right, around these things, it actually is inhibiting their child's social development because they're made fun of, they don't have an account, they don't have a cell phone, things like that. Not saying you need to give in to peer pressure yourself as a parent, but consider that this can be a healthy way for kids to communicate these days. And so you have to consider that as they develop, you're going to loosen your requirements, just like you would, with movies, right? It's the same kind of idea here. When are they able to start to take on this responsibility? And again, going back to helping them develop into appropriate into appropriate relationships with others and having good social development overall, you want them to be advancing. You don't want to stifle that process. So if, again, for good or bad, this is part of what your kids are going to be involved with. And again, it has to be done in a very healthy way. So, in wrapping up, helpful resources. These are all websites that I listed. There are many PDFs you could download. Like I said, videos that you can actually watch online to help you set up these different levels of control and protection. The first being the ESRB that I mentioned earlier. Another one that's great that has involvement through the government is OnGuardOnline.gov. StaySafeOnline.org is another wonderful resource. ConnectSafely.org. That outlines, again, more just general internet-based types of security that you can put in place, whereas, like I said, the ESRB is more gaming-based software that you can use and different parental controls you can put in place. GetNetWise.org helps, again, parents, even teachers, too, I think, and other mental health professionals. It's important for everyone to be on the same page with this. So you get really wise, get, you know, educated about what you could do to keep your children safe. Next slide is the end of the presentation, so Q&A. Did anyone have any questions written down on the cards that we could turn in?